Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Freaking kids are at Disneyland with another man and this and that. You know, you just, it feels weird. Meanwhile, I'd probably be too lazy to take them to Disneyland myself because I wouldn't want to go there. But the fact that's how you think, right? So they come home and little Gabe's laughing because they dropped him off and they go, "Dad, the funniest thing happened." I was like, "What?" "We went to the bathroom with John, our stepfather, and Sam said," and the whole bathroom was laughing. He looked over the stall and he goes, "John, your dad's penis is so much bigger than my dad's." I mean, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. We laughed and I was like, how could this be happening?
D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
For listening to Divorce Party. We really appreciate it. If you like this podcast, we'd love it if you could leave us 5 stars on Spotify podcasts or Apple podcasts. And if you want to see our lovely faces, we do have a YouTube channel where you can watch the episodes and be sure to like and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Divorce Party Podcast. Welcome to Divorce Party. I'm Monica Casey here with Tom Arnold. We have an extra special guest today. It is Tom's manager. He's been Tom's manager for the last decade or more. I'm sure he has some great stories about Tom, and he's also divorced and now happily remarried. I can't wait to hear what he's learned and how it's changed him. Please welcome to the show, Eric Kritzer. Hello. Okay, so you've been Tom's manager for how many years? Oh my gosh, that's a long time. In Hollywood, that's like a marriage of 50 years.
I know. I had Ron Perlman, 27 years. Burt was 28 years. Yeah, Burt Reynolds. Wow. So I've had that. But with Tom, we just have so much in common, you know.
Oh my gosh. When you first met Tom, did somebody say, "Hey, come meet Crazy Tom Arnold"? Like, was he already?
You know, I went after him. He was at ICM, and I went after him for a while, and then his agent, you know, let me in a little bit, and then it just worked out, and it was just very easy from the beginning. You know, I understood him. You know,
Tom, I've noticed, has such a big heart. That's one of the things I think people don't know about him.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that makes you work harder for him. You know, that's what makes me work harder, because he's such a good person. You want to see good things happen to him. And he does so many for others. We're talking about you, Tom.
Oh my God. Keep going. Keep going.
We're glowing. You know? I'm grilling Eric on what it was like when he first met you. And
oh yeah.
I said, how many years have we been together? 10, 15?
I said 10 or 15. That was my best guess.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like 50, but 10 or 15. And it's been a long time, you know. You know, Eric has been not just professionally, but very close personally. He's the only person who has gone to court with me with with my ex, and I feel like Eric should tell that story.
I will. I will.
Yeah.
What made you want to become a manager?
Oh yeah.
Of crazy actors.
All right. So what happened was in 19. It went like this. If you want, this is how it all happened. In 1986, I was riding a motorcycle at University of Arizona with my best friend fraternity brother, who Tom knows, Todd Eisner, was behind me, holding me like I was his girlfriend going through the desert fast. You know, it just did not look good. And I was thinking about maybe being a musician, and I, you know, was riding the bike, and I said, "Hey, Todd, what are you doing after college?" He goes, "Oh, I think I'm going to be an agent at this place called William Morris Agency." I go, "What does an agent do?" They go, "They get actors jobs." And I said, "Maybe I'll do that for musicians." You know, that was my first thought. And then about 3 weeks later, I got a book at the library about what agents did. I educated myself. I started calling William Morris. I got an interview, which is really hard to get if you don't have family that works there.
Yes.
I had hair that looked like Peter Frampton. I cut my Peter Frampton hair, and then I got my Jewish entertainment guy look.
Yeah.
And I mastered that because I had long hair. That was part of my personality for so many years.
By the way, for anyone listening, you have the full-on Hollywood manager.
He does not dress like that normally.
Every day, Tom. Every day. That. What are you talking about?
He told me he had some meetings.
What are you talking about?
Well, usually I talk to Eric about 7:30 p.m. when he's going to sleep.
Like, you could even have an Eric sighting. Like, this is a look. Like, if I went to the Polo Lounge, if I was a tourist, I'd be like, that guy's totally an agent.
You know what it is? Yes. The truth is why I chose to look nice today and dress for success is because our subject, your subject of this podcast, is something that is very, very serious to me. My personality, I like to have a lot of fun in everything I do. But when it comes to this topic, from what I experienced and what I've advised others since my first divorce, I've been divorced two times. As Tom does, you know, Tom was known even before I knew him. If someone had a problem, you can call Tom at 1 a.m. He would go meet a stranger and try to get them help or help with his own advice. I became that guy in Hollywood as the go-to guy. If you're a woman or male, didn't matter. Call Kritzer, go have a lunch with him. He will tell you exactly what you need to know, the good, the bad, the ugly. And so I take pride in that, you know, in advising. And also, I made so many mistakes from the first divorce, and then in helping people and listening to people over the 7 years that I was not married, and then through my second divorce. So my second divorce, I was very proud in the way that I handled myself, because I learned and I evolved. Okay.
You know, because Eric is, you know, during my, probably my most recent divorce, you know, he started talking about, because there's kids involved. And he said, just beware of parental alienation, whatever. And I never heard that term. And he was very serious. He goes, this is what can happen. This is what, you know, and I'm sure he shared that with a lot of people. But I was not familiar with that. I became very familiar with it. But thanks to Eric, because nobody else, first of all, when you get divorced, I found my experience with men is, you know, they're like, what's going on? Okay, I want none of that. And Eric is I don't know if he's got a feminine side, but he's a little soft-hearted, which is great because he'll hang in there. And I always say you need to have women friends if you go through a divorce with somebody or custody stuff, because women will tell you the truth. Like, you're out of line, or that's crazy. She's crazy. Like, and they'll tell you the truth. And you're one of the few men who will share, you know, your ups and downs, experiences, the crazy shit you've done, the hilarious.
I'll share a couple of those today. I had a hand pick because you know, it's so funny. You want to share everything, but, you know, you have two kids that are in their 20s. You have an ex-wife, or actually two ex-wives that you get along with now. But I got some good stories. But before we get into that, I just want to tell you, you know, I did help Tom. And when Tom was going through the pivotal part of his divorce, which was the child custody arrangement, we experienced together, I experienced with Tom watching, even with the highest paid attorneys you can buy, they were not doing the job that they should have in representing Tom. And I was so thankful that I was there. I volunteered. I called Tom. I go, hey, do you have any friends going with you? He goes, no. I go, I'll be there, you know. And by the way, I don't do that with a lot of people, you right. know. I do that, as we discussed early, because Tom has helped so many people. He deserved to have someone by his side. And right. Tom's lawyers were trying to talk him out of 50-50. Mm-hmm. And Tom would not take it from them. He went into the bathroom of the courthouse, refused to come out. He had female lawyers, so they couldn't go in there. So I was the middleman, the best friend, manager. I had to go in. I wrote some notes what the lawyers said. I said, Tom, they're thinking this. No, tell them I'm not coming out of this court bathroom until, and he would not go, come out. And you know what? He got his 50-50. Mm-hmm. Am I missing anything there, Tom?
Well, you know, my lawyers were a little shady because they were afraid of my ex. So they're like, she's never going to agree to anything. And I was like, I don't care. And, you know, we were up in front of the judge. The judge was doing her best to, you know, convince my ex. I mean, this is the right thing. And then at one point they sent Eric in the bathroom with, and it was a tight bathroom. It's one in Santa Monica Courthouse. First floor. And they sent him in with some notes. And I read him and I go, that's not 50, that's 53-47. No, no, it's got to be, fuck it, yeah. I'm not coming out. I want it now. I want it today. I don't want to, I'm not leaving here. And if we have to have a trial, this is what we're doing. And he went back and then the judge, then they said, this is what we're making our, because 50-50 is the right thing. Right. You know, I knew I was going to have other issues with her down the line.
I hope this is a scene that we're writing for later down the line.
It is. Let me tell you one thing about that
experience.
Yeah. The one thing that Tom doesn't know is I had to go back in and out of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And even though this is way before pre-COVID, I was a germaphobe. And I remember being like, oh, I got to touch that bathroom court door one more time. I was flipping out. Anyway.
Oh, God. And I also just want to say really quickly, I don't know why I'm shocked or floored, but I love that you offered to go to court with Tom. I never luckily had to go to court, but I had to go to a lot of uncomfortable things, and not one person, and I feel like I have a lot of good friends, not one person ever offered.
Thank you. Thank you for saying I'll just tell you that was not me having to work for Tom and being his manager. Mm-hmm. That was because Tom's personality as a human being is so giving and so kind and so caring to so many people. And that is, you know what? I just wanted to make sure that he had someone there next with him in such a lonely time. I mean, how do you deal with the stress of that by yourself in court when your family's not out here? You don't have, you know, any support. You just don't. Yeah.
Plus, Eric has dealt with a lot of lawyers of all kinds. So these are, as Eric goes, very, very high priced law firm. And I could tell they wanted to just get something settled or whatever. And Eric was great because he could talk to them and he could talk to me. He could talk to, you know, these big lawyers. They could talk to me. And I just knew this is January 10th, 2020, before COVID. But I just knew that it had to be now, because I kind of got back and forth with her for a couple years. And so the judge, at one point, she was crazy. It's crazy. She's like, had her team leave. And she goes, Are you sure? I go, yeah. And she goes, okay, I've got to make her think she won today. So I've got to get my head around that. So the judge, when I come back in, is like, Look at this. You got to do 50-50. I mean, look at the guy. Look at him. It's not like he's going to be around forever. I mean, geez, look at him. You know, I don't know if he's ever going to work it. She was trying to get her to on the alimony. You better get a job, she said, because I don't see this guy working whatever. And then it got to the point where then the judge like, would you start in August? This is January. I go, no, today. Because I'm already having trouble breathing. So today, right now, and here's the school schedule. And here's so came back in, and that the judge had talked to her attorney and said, you know, this is the right thing. This is how California looks at it. And so she's looking at her like, just do this. You're the winner to her. And we're getting ready to sign it. She goes, I want $50,000 more right there, right in front of the judge. I go, 40? She goes, done, and signed it. And I knew there had to be some extra thing for, you know, it was like an auction for my kids. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's perfect. It is like an auction. That's unbelievable.
You know, that was a seminal moment to me because my attorneys were like, oh, she'll never agree to anything. Well, that's her problem. And, you know, then we got to go for full custody. They're like, you know, and they wanted, as good of attorneys they are, they wanted me to sign for less. If I'd have been there without Eric, I would have went to the back. Nobody could have commanded. Eric was doing the shuttle diplomacy, like Israel and Egypt for back in the day or something, and back and forth. But he was great, you know. And I know enough about Eric, been honest about his situations, whatever. But once in a while, I think I'm pretty open-minded, I'll compromise. But once in a while, there's something, and I'm like, fuck this. And once in a while, something means a lot.
Yep, it is.
The kids are the most, but
I'd like to talk about custody for a second.
Yeah.
Because in Tom's scenario, he deserved 50% custody. He owns his 50% custody. He is the best father I have seen out there. All his free time is with his children. Okay. Now, for me, I was in the war of my divorce, my first divorce.
And how old were you?
I was, it was probably, my son was 3, so it was about 16, 17 years ago, okay? I don't know, yeah, I'm 58 now. So I was in that adrenaline rush that you have that you just want to get back. I felt I was the victim. I was going to get it back. And for me, the kryptonite have always been the children, okay? Mm-hmm. I came from a divorce in the 70s. I was the kid that was the divorced kid that had learning disabilities because of the divorce and got free lunch because of the divorce and don't play with that kid because he was divorced. So when I got married, I was very, very aware of how a divorce can screw up children, me and my sister. And then boom, out of my control, I'm getting divorced and we're at war. And I will say about custody, you got to be careful what you're fighting for. You want to win, you want to win, you want to win. But sometimes 50-50 is not appropriate for a father. And what happened with me is I won that 50-50. And then my ex-wife started to bring me to the therapy, the child therapy that they appointed to us to make it child-centric. And they started saying things that I didn't want to hear. And in this point, I was wrong. I was working till 8:30 at night sometimes. So if you have 50-50, I would have the kids Monday, Thursday, Friday, and then revolving Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you know, so sometimes 5 times a week. And if I'm not coming home till 8 and the nanny picks them up at 2:30, what good is the custody with me because they're at my house when they're with the strange lady, nice or not so nice, doesn't, you know, but hopefully nice, from 2:30 till 8:30 when I came home. So what we did is we redid the agreement that she had first refusal in that if I knew I wasn't going to come home, I can say, hey, do you want the kids that night? Without being penalized financially, or do you want to come pick it up? And what ended up happening is I gave up a day. It didn't cost me anything more But I gave up a day. And by the way, when I say I gave up a day, it was in with the therapist and my ex-wife and her husband. And, you know, it was pressured. And I signed the thing, but I wasn't thinking clearly. I just wanted to win my fight. And in retrospect, I'm glad that I gave up that day because it was best for the children. And yeah, for me, everyone's different, but you know, you go into these battles, you want to win everything, right? And the other little piece of advice that I myself, you know, listen, this is how emotional it is. When you're in it, and when I say you're in it, it's funny. Tom, you know a guy named Sam Gorris, correct? Right? His sister-in-law, Lisa Gorris, was set on a date with me early on through like when I was going through the separation process. And she's a gorgeous woman. And we sat down at dinner and I started talking and it was maybe 6 minutes. She looked at me. She goes, Kritzer, you're not ready for me. I go, what do you mean? She goes, you're in it. I
yeah.
go, what are you talking? She goes, no, you're in it right now. You're not ready for anything. She goes, I can see it in your eyes. And she was 100% right. And what happens is you get that look that Vietnam soldiers get, the thousand yard stare, where to this day, when I look back at me coaching soccer for my kids and the look that I have in my eye is strange, and it's from that adrenaline. And the good news is, hey, the best part of a divorce is you look skinny. We all look good.
I've never been so thin.
Yeah, that's yeah. So when you go through that, you know what ends up happening. What I see people doing, if I can just like give the tips of things that are wasted energy that you think are so important. Number one is, I would walk around telling everyone my story. Yeah. Anyone that would listen. And you know what? At the end of the day, no one wants to hear it all the time.
No.
Do it with your own personal therapist, with one or two best friends that really care about you. And to the rest of the people, you have to try to control yourself because you just keep talking about it and talking about it. It's wasted energy and you need to save your energy because it's so stressful. Okay.
I have a question about when you were working during this time. I mean, how did it affect your work? Because
you want to hear a story?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So this is a true story. I was with my client, Burt Reynolds, when I was going to get the news if I was not in my marriage anymore. Okay. I knew that she was going to call me at a certain time. Burt Reynolds invited me to his house with his son, and I got the call confirming that my marriage was off. And he gave me such a hug. And Burt was very well-versed in divorce and well-versed in having representatives going through divorce. And he said, I love you, buddy. And I went home, dealt with my life. And a week later, via fax, I got fired by Burt Reynolds by his lawyer. And it said, Dear Eric, I wish you well with your divorce. I need someone focused on me right now. Please give a call when you're done. And when I read that, I was like cursing at him and everything. Like I couldn't understand, but he's right. You know what? What it happens is, you know, an email would come in from the lawyer, right? From her lawyer or my lawyer. And you look at it. And for me, my brain, I just couldn't understand what was going on. It would, the amount of emotion that it would wreck my day. So thank God it's a great question. And what happens is that it affects every part of your life. So that being said, the less people you share what you're going through, the better stockbroker, lawyer, representative you will be, the less lost that you that can happen. You're already going through such loss. You don't need financial loss from your business. So just, it's better to control it and not talk to people. So, I experienced that, and it was very, very hard, but it's a funny story now in retrospect.
But it's also that feeling of, it's such a traumatic thing, and anything triggers that thing. I think a lot of people, most people, when they go through a divorce, they're dealing with stuff. You get the legal stuff and you get the stuff and there's kids involved. So it gets you in that, you know, it'd be natural for anybody to go through, we have heard stories out here where people went through it and then they resolved it and it, in a year and everything moved on. And Monica is a good example of that, everybody, I have to say, when it goes on for 7 years and
it's too much,
your circle of people, my circle of people is very small. And it's great, but it's very small. It's you guys, a couple other women, sober people, and because you, first of all, you have to figure out, what is my story? What is really happening here?
When am I going to own my part and all the things?
Yeah, and so, but you see it. I see it with my assistant and the housekeeper. Anytime some legal thing or I get served over here, or she's threatened to do something, I can see them get more anxious. And I told Monica this last time, I said, I'm gonna really try to stay out of the, because my fear was always, this is the time I lose my kids or I have to go to jail, which she wants, or die. And that's just not gonna happen. And I finally realized too, she's always gonna do this. She, whatever her thing is, she has no control. So it's always happening, but tomorrow, I'll be a dad for 11 years. And we've made it through at least half of their childhood by doing it this way. And it's not like she wants the kids. There are some women or men that are like, I want to be with the kids 24/7. I want to do this thing. And at a certain point, I realized, oh, no, that's not what she wants. So that takes a little pressure off, too. So there's not that, that pressure of, okay, well, where you ask yourself, maybe it would be the best, like you did, Eric. Maybe it would be. I'm 100% sure it would be. That's reassuring.
Yeah. And Eric, I want to know about your friend situation. You've been divorced 2 times.
Yes.
How were you able to, because Tom talks about this sometimes, how certain friends like choose sides. Yeah. Did that?
Yes. So I just want to end, just go back. So when my divorce was finalized, I called Bert. I go, Bert Reynolds, you ready to go back to work? He goes, absolutely, kid. That was it. And then he was my client. So I have to finish. I got the client back.
Yeah, you did.
So, friends are a funny scenario. You can't have that one friend that tries to be friends with both.
No.
It doesn't work. A friend of, what is it the saying? A friend of all is a friend of none. There's always that one that tries to be.
You can't be Switzerland.
It really doesn't work. And I think you have to know that when you're going to go through this divorce, a lot of those friends, that side of the family that you love and hanging out, are going to go bye-bye. And then some will stay with you. And it's usually the ones that have the deeper roots will stay no matter what. It doesn't matter if the person cheated, if the person committed a crime, they love that person. It goes years, they're related. So, that's the other thing that if I may say, is we all have our story, and it becomes like state prison. Everyone's innocent all of a sudden, no one's going to say, oh, I was the worst husband. Very rarely do they say that, but the fact of the matter is, in the state of California, and I think also in the state, in many, many states, especially like New York, the big states, the truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter who's right or wrong.
Right.
And we can sit there for so many hours trying to make yourself look like the right person, show who the wrong person is. At the end of the day, when you're getting divorced, it's a formula, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's about the division of assets. And it's about the custody of children, what's best for them, and the rest of winning. Like, I would spend, and, an email would come in from my ex, a text, and then I would email back and reread it, and it would make me feel good. And I'm like, okay, this is genius. I show my mom, and what do you think of this? Look at what I wrote.
Your mom.
And you know what? It doesn't mean anything, okay? The only thing you have to do with emails, pay attention, is not say anything crazy that can get you in trouble with the court later on. The rest of the going back and forth, the truth of the matter is, if I, and this is how I handled it in my second marriage, which wasn't war, it was just a marriage that ended.
Yeah, you still got your house. He's still got his house. He's got
So I am, this is when I
you haven't signed, followed Tom's footsteps of no prenups, nothing.
Yeah. Well, I actually did. I didn't have a prenup on the second one. I was stupid about that. But when I sit and I sign actors and they want to know, they're in my conference room, they say, they want to know deals. I go, look, I'm not really a bragger, but I'll say one thing about my negotiation skills. I'm the only guy in LA that's been divorced 2 times and I still have my house. Okay. I get a little laugh out of that one. Yes.
Well, you've got some funny stories. Yeah, like things you're proud of or not proud of.
These are terrible stories. All right. So my first marriage, she gets remarried. I will say it's the most unnatural thing when you have when you get divorced, your children are, it's unnatural for your children to be exposed to other ideologies and ethics and everything, because now you only have 50% influence, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're exposed to things that you would never want your children exposed to, you know? Thank God my ex did marry a very nice man. And they went to Disneyland. Gabe must have been 3. It was the beginning. Sam must have been 5 or 6. And they went to Disneyland. I remember I was a little bummed out, like my freaking kids were at Disneyland with another man and then this and that. You know, it feels weird. Meanwhile, I'd probably be too lazy to take them to Disneyland myself because I wouldn't want to go there. But the fact that's how you think, right? So they come home. And little Gabe is laughing because they dropped him off and they go, Dad, the funniest thing happened. I was like, what? We went to the bathroom with John, our stepfather, and Sam said, and the whole bathroom was laughing. He looked over the stall. He goes, John, your dad's penis is so much bigger than my dad's. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. We laughed and I was like, how could this be happening to me? This is like all the things that I don't want to hear.
Yeah.
So that was one good story. And here's the other story I think that actually caused the divorce. I will start by saying something that not everyone may agree with me, but just from my own personal experience and then counseling and sitting with other people, I have not yet heard this. Well, you know, we were having so many problems in our marriage and we went to this wonderful psychologist that does couples therapy and we did like 3 months and it just all worked out. I think that couples therapy opens the door to divorce more than anything. I truly believe if you're going to go for therapy, you go 1 or 2 times as a couple, and then individually, you go to your own therapist and work on your own problems, okay? But if you're going to sit in a room and get beaten up back and forth, and as a couple, you can't sit like one of my wives, I'm not going to say which one it is, used to say, you know, I just don't feel comfortable discussing this with you unless we're with, you know, therapist. Okay. That's marriage. There. You have to be comfortable in your house to discuss things. So, all right. So the bottom line is we were going to a therapist the first time and Jen and myself were sitting on the small black couch and we were paying a lot of money for this therapist, and she used to look at the two of us, except she had one problem. She would look at us like this. She goes, I think she was cross-eyed. God. She was a cross-eyed lady. I didn't know if she was giving her the advice or me the advice. I think I should sue her. I think that was the end of my marriage.
What I found is people, they go, let's do couples counseling, because at least one of them knows they're getting a divorce. And they're like, you know, my thing if a couple counseling is good, and so you know you're getting a divorce. How do we have a soft landing for everybody? How do we consciously uncouple or whatever? And I think in my experience, I did all the counseling. This was before, during the marriage. And mm-hmm. I did all the therapy. And it just seemed, it was, you when you're with somebody that will not be introspective about anything about their behavior, or, you know, they'll do something and they'll go, we need to move on. Or that, why are you living in the past? Well, it just happened yesterday. Why? And then you realize, oh, it's all coming on you. But you're also grateful because you know, okay, I've tried literally everything. This is just not gonna work. This is not gonna work. I've tried
it's
everything.
That both of you at least went. There's so many spouses, and I mean, I'm just generally saying men that are like, nope, not gonna go, you know? So it's like, at least you were open to like making it work.
We wanted to keep it together. Listen, there wasn't a case in both my divorces. I wanted my marriages to work. I just did. I didn't want to be divorced again, you know? So another story of my, like, here I am, I'm wearing a nice suit for you guys. This was my lowest. This was my lowest of low stories. So during my first marriage, and I'm going to give points, the most important thing you can do when you have children and you're saving up for their future is to make sure that their college money is secured in a 529 kind of account. What I did is I saved up a lot of money, and I was going to put it in this account, the 529 account. And my ex said to me, hey, you know what? Everyone's flipping houses. Let's flip a house. We'll double the money, and then we'll take that money and put it in the college fund. And by the way, I agreed. It was a great idea. People were doing it all around us. It was a smart kind of thing. But what ended up is about 3 weeks later, I was getting divorced. And now all of a sudden, that college money that I saved up for, that I was so proud that I worked hard for, is community money. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now a check has to be split. As soon as the lawyers come and get involved, I have to cut half of that, which I consider the college money, not community. I don't care that you're calling community money. She knows, I know, this is college money. Didn't matter. So I cut the check, and I think she was buying a new car or something like that. And I wanted a Range Rover. And I wanted to prove that she paid what she paid for it. And I was living around the block with a client of mine, Louis Mandelore, on Hauser. We were, so I could, you know, come back and forth, pick up the kids, be right there. But I was not allowed in the house or near the house because we were at war together, and the lawyers put something, you know, you're not allowed to come at the house. Anyway, I waited till they left. And at that time, my mother-in-law was living with us while while we were going through the divorce. So the kids, the mother-in-law, Jen leave, and they're going to California Pizza Kitchen because she had texted me, and I waited till they left, and she had changed the locks and changed the code of the alarm. So I went on my knees. I crawled through my doggy door. Okay. It was probably like 7 o'clock at night. I got into the house through a doggy door. And I got up to the computer room, and she changed the password to her computer. I sat there for an hour, and I figured out it was like her Yiddish Jewish name. And I got in there, and there was a lot of files. I was going to get this and prove that she's wrong and I'm right, and whatever the bullshit I was trying to prove. And I'm looking at the files. I can't find anything. And there's one file left, and it was addressed DH. I was like, what is DH? Dickhead. That's me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, that's my file, dickhead. And I got the thing, and I'm printing it out. And it's making the loud noise. And all of a sudden, the door opens downstairs. I hear ding, ding. You think I'm going to lose my
custody. Like, my life is over.
It's like I'm committing a big crime.
Yeah.
I jumped into the spare bedroom's, my mother-in-law's bathtub, okay? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I laid there from 7:30, 8 o'clock, till 2 in the morning, okay, till everyone was asleep. And I crawled out of that bathtub on my stomach like a military guy, because I knew where all the creeks were in the house, crawled down the steps backwards, out the freaking doggy door again with this stupid paper from Range Rover that got me nowhere. It got me nowhere. God. So that was the lowest of the low of how, you know,
I think that may be my favorite. That's very War of the Roses. I love it.
Yeah,
it well, was. Also, you know, this story could go a lot of different ways. He's in his mother-in-law's bathtub. She comes
up. I was going to say,
this could be a porn. This could be, then it gets really.
Yeah. She I didn't get to see my mother-in-law.
You could have been shot. Thank God. You could have been arrested. Thank God.
Yeah, I want to tell you another story with Eric. Now, Eric, at different points in my travels with all this stuff, he calls up and goes, I have a guy. You need to get a private eye. You need to get some kind of security. And he goes, I got a guy. He was a former Mossad agent, a great, tough guy, Zev. So I get him, and it was the right thing, this guy. But I said to him, I'm talking to him. He's a big dude. You know, he wears Speedos still. But he's a big dude and really a nice guy.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, well, because he shows Sasha pictures of when he was in Mossad. You know, Israeli guys, that's all they do.
Yeah.
So, you know, very nice guy. The kids and I would go swim at his house. We very sweet guy. But I said, well, tell me about what Eric's a great guy, is he? And I go, yeah, he's you know, and he doesn't want to share because that's his job. Is, you know, he's really good. In fact, he was at my house one day, working with all the cameras, and my ex-wife came right through the front door because it was cracked open, and grabbed a box of stuff, and he looks at her, and he goes, do you need help with that? Like, he wanted to get out the door. And she goes, see, he's a gentleman. Little did she know, he just downloaded all this video that, and he gets her out there. Anyway, but here's a story I heard from Zev. Zev does not, he loves Eric. And I'd say, I don't see Eric being a brawler, you know? He's like, oh my God, let me tell you a story. We were going, and I'm not gonna say who it was with, he tracked down somebody, I don't know if they're dating, what year wise, I don't know what the deal is. And he's like, we're gonna go in there, you gotta be totally cool, and I will handle it. Me and my guys, we'll do whatever we got, but you gotta be cool. And Eric's like, okay, I'll be cool. And he said, Eric comes in there, just immediately goes up to the guy and just starts railing on him. And he's looking at it, he goes, they had this whole thing worked out, and he said, to be calm, we're gonna do whatever we're gonna do. And it was amazing. It was amazing because he said, I deal with a lot of circumstances, but a wild card like that is, in the best of my training, you don't go, oh, the one guy's going to lose it. And so
Zev, Zev tried handling me as best as I can. But as I say, during that first marriage, my mind wasn't, I was too out to get back. And by the way, from that scene, they did, my one of my close friends growing up, Doug Ellen, did an Entourage episode of that. Yeah. That brawl up at Barney's Greengrass in Beverly Hills. Yeah. I mean, I have been, you know, it's been years that I was able to recuperate from all that ugliness. But I will say this, as ugly as my divorce got, that first one, as parents, mm-hmm. We always came together for the kids. We were at all the birthday parties together. I went on 2 trips to Israel with them for my children's bar mitzvahs out there. That's not to say now everything could be going good, and then one email missile comes in, and it's like it's nuclear war again. That's how quick it can happen. And I think I exhausted her. She exhausted me. And now, you know what? When kids are in their 20s, you know, it's I don't have to deal with them, and they don't have to deal with me, but we still come together on certain things. And, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. That's the whole thing. And when you're in it, if you can just control as much emotion, and it's the hardest thing to do, believe me, and just realize you have a formula that you have to go through, and it's just a division of assets, and you have to rearrange your life, and you may have to move into a smaller home and apartment for a number of years to get back your finances. You know, but the most important thing that Tom and I both know is about those children. And if the children are caught in the crossfire of arguments and what we discussed before, parental alienation. And by the way, parental alienation could be the simplest thing as, you know, I was talking to your father the other day, you know, your dad, you know, and all of a sudden, before a divorce, you're a kid's hero. And then all of a sudden they see your mother, you're their mom, their grandmother, an aunt talking about you in and with just a different facial expression. That's the little
rolling the
eyes. That is parental, that is parental alienation on the littlest, smallest level. Mine, you know, my experience went all different ranges. You know, and I will tell a story that's a very sad story, in that when things settled down and I announced that I was getting remarried, another wave of arguments went back and forth with me and the ex, and it caused me a lot of stress that my body completely broke down, and I got autoimmune disease where I was walking for 6 months with a cane. I couldn't type. This isn't exaggerated. This is what happened to my body. It broke down from this because I couldn't handle another experience like this when something so wonderful, a new marriage was happening. I was walking with a cane, and it took a while. I had to go on Humira medication, which is a biological shot to slow down the autoimmune from fighting. So I really went through a lot of physical pain as well as mental pain through all these experiences. And, you know, the thing about what, you know, why I like giving advice to people is because I really went through it. I think, you know, you can always, when you ask for advice, you have to make sure that that person, no matter what it is, what subject it is, has gone through something, you know, because otherwise it's, I don't like getting, I personally don't like getting advice from someone that didn't experience it, you know? And
it's like a therapist too. You don't want to go to a therapist that hasn't like lived a life, you know, gone through and experienced it. What do you feel like you've learned from all of this? Because now you're in marriage number 3.
No. Now I live with my girlfriend and her daughter, who's in 5th grade. I'm in the best relationship. By the way, my daughter. My daughter and Tom's daughter play together. They have play dates. So
she's very smart. She's very, her mom is worked with her. She's very smart. Eric has a great thing, but I first heard about it. First of all, he was living in an RV for some reason. Like, even his friend Todd Iser's like, what the, is he?
I'll tell you what. Yeah, so what happened was, is during the second divorce, it was during COVID, and I was not going to ask my ex-wife to be to move out of my house, even though it was my house for 23 years and we were only married 8 years. I wasn't going to ask her to move out. I said, look, you have enough issues that you have to deal with. Stay in the house. wait till the divorce is over. We'll see how much money comes to you. And I'll go live in my RV because I wasn't going to work every day. It was COVID, right?
Gentlemen.
And I had the best Gentlemen. Life in that RV, except in LA when you go online dating and then go meet at, let's say, Craig's.
Serial killer.
You go to Craig's and they're like, so where do you live? And I say an RV. It's not a deal closer. It is not a deal closer. Okay. So I was lucky to find my girlfriend now of 2 years. And so what you were asking me a question.
Well, okay. First of all, let me say this. I when I heard about you and the RV, I felt, this is my feeling, oh, he's getting used to this. Like, this is, I can see him, the way he talks about it.
I liked it.
This could be, you know, because men at a certain point go, geez, what do I really need?
In a sense, life is simpler. You know, it probably would be good for some people to experience that for like a year.
Yeah,
you know,
it was great. You got to come over. We'll make steaks for the kids at my RV. I'm like, what is happening?
What RV park were you living in? Or were you like in Venice?
I was 3 miles from my house. There's a place called Hollywood RV Park. And it's this little oasis where a lot of traveling nurses, doctors, it's by Van Nuys Airport. So a lot of airline guys, people. Yeah. And I thought it was incredible. There was a gym right there. And my kids were so disgusted that I lived there. Yeah. That they did not come to visit too many times there.
My question was, what have you learned about yourself from the two divorces? Or how?
Well, let me say one thing. First of all, he goes, unlike you, I've learned I don't know if I'll ever be in a relationship. I'm just going to date. Like, this is what he's telling me. And then all of a sudden, I call him, and he goes, well, I got somebody. And I went over, the kids and I went over, and it happened. And then I hear the story, and I'll let him tell the story. But, you hear, okay, it's a woman. She has a daughter, whatever, how they met. And then I went over with everybody in the house. I mean, she's amazing. But it felt like, and Eric's got a big heart. So he'll say, here, I'm tough love. Here's what I'm going to do. I got my RV. I got my gun. I'm going to but then as soon as I got there, I realized, I understand this completely. Plus, Eric, speak to me for a moment.
Yes.
I had my son 11 years ago. And I'm like, that's everything. But then when I heard you had a daughter, and tell me what the difference, what you feel like about your relationship, because you have a great relationship with her. Yeah. Is it different than boys? I think it is.
I still am so close with my kids. They're absolutely my boys. That's been strange because of a divorce, but it really, you know what, now it's perfect. But the fact of the matter is that my relationship with Mia, who's my 11-year-old daughter in fifth grade, it's just so different. It's so tender. Here's the thing. It's pure, you know, and I probably would have had a beautiful, pure relationship throughout my Sam and Gabe's childhood, but it couldn't be because there was too much chaos going on, you know, too much chaos, nothing of their fault, but too much chaos going on. Like, you know, what happens in a divorce, they were young, you know, and, you know, they, when they would come, you know, their mom would be like, hey, listen, remember, we're going to a Laker game on Saturday. She could be there, you know, have fun at your dad's. And they would like come into my house that I was renting, but like they wanted to get the hell out of there as quick as possible. It was like, oh my, it was crazy. Here's a little piece of advice I do want to give parents. You know, I was out here alone, okay, with, I didn't have family, they were all in New York, and my ex's sisters, three sisters, her parents, everyone was out here. And what ended up happening is I couldn't compete with the holidays. You know, they were always having a nice holiday with people coming over. They didn't want to be at my house. So then I started like splitting the holiday day up, and then they would come here. They didn't want to eat because their mom didn't want them to eat here, to eat there. And it just was unenjoyable. So I kind of gave up. Mm-hmm. And when I gave up, I didn't even try to make it special for the days that I had them, because I knew it would be a losing battle. I made a big mistake with that. And what I should have done is taken an hour out of my day and made plans and made it a bigger event that it was important for them to be here. Because what ended up happening is, as the kids got older, oh yeah, it's Christmas and Hanukkah, we're going to go with moms and we'll be at moms as usual. And you can't fight it back after you lose it. So what you have to do is you have to make it special, as special as you can.
Unique as you can. Probably because of my situation where I was always nervous about this stuff, I do all the any heavy lifting holiday. It's somehow, you know what I think you should do, Christmas or Halloween, or any of the, I think they're better with you. They have more fun, you know. The other person does not want to do, because there's a lot of work. But like what you said, you could have made your time special, whatever time you had, and it would have been unique. And then later they talk about, remember when we were dads, and mom does things like this way, but dad is cool when he had this thing. And
you're good at doing that, Tom. You're good at doing that, you know?
Yes. Kids want quality time. They want time with you. They want to feel like you're, you know, they're seen and heard and all that stuff.
Yeah. And he has a good, so I think the first time I met Mia and her mom, by the way, her mom is, I mean, like, beautiful. And really a top quality person. She takes good care of Eric, but she's also such a great mother, like hands on, whatever. But I felt like, oh, she's given, gives him his space, but like he wants for nothing. I'm just going to tell you, I don't want to go into it, but I'm going to tell you. And she's had an interesting journey. Like, this is a woman who has survived and dealt with stuff. And as much as I'm happy for Eric to be with those guys, I'm happy for them to be with him. Because whatever it was before, you know, this, it's crazy they're together. It's crazy things are going so well. But they both, they're like, this is what I need. And Eric provides, you know, everything. He goes to bed at 7 at night, she told me. But, but he really does. And he's always, you know, getting into with the kid, and she talks to Quinn, and Quinn, I trust Quinn. I don't trust her to go everywhere, but when she goes with those girls, man, it's on. And she,
you know what the winning formula is in my relationship now that I never really had, is appreciation, mutual appreciation. Yeah. You know, I always felt taken advantage of in a way, and I would let myself get taken advantage of. It's just appreciation. And I will say, my kids, who I've always remained close with, of course, there's tensions with the divorce. Even now, like, I just had dinner with them on Wednesday night. We went for sushi. They love coming around the house.
They came when I was there with them.
Yeah,
they
love Galena. Like, they're comfortable with Galena.
Yeah.
And comfortable with Mia. And, you know, it's the perfect ending, a beginning of a new chapter. Mm-hmm. And I feel love in every single which way. And even with the first ex-wife, we still communicate now in a positive way about the kids. Nothing more than that. Sometimes, you know, I'll send something funny. I texted their stepdad happy birthday the other day. My second wife, you know, it's so interesting when you don't have kids,
it's easy.
There's really nothing to, you know, you move on with your life. It's like a breakup of a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And that's sad in a way. It's like that song. I'm not going to sing it, but you know, like that song that came, Somebody I Used to Know.
Gaudier or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's that. It's sad. Yeah, that was a good call, Tom. It's sad.
It's all my music thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what happens. There's nothing, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to talk about. You know.
Let me say that the place you're in, the place both of us are in, because I'm not, no matter what, in my situation, I accept, oh, it's not going to change. That the other person, It's not going to change. And here's all the great things about it not changing. Here's why I don't have to deal with. Here's how I could be, learn to be the best parent I can be, do things my way. There's no, you know, and just knowing someone is not going to change, they're always going to do crazy shit. You accept it. And what I found in the last 7 years is you never want your kids to know. You never want the weird stuff, but they know. At a certain point they go, and yeah. It's such a stark difference between, I think, between her style, her place, and me. And so the kids, I think, they appreciate it. Now, yeah, but that, let me just say one more story like this. After our time in court that one time, you know, it had taken a toll on me. Soon after, 3 weeks after, I ended up at UCLA on life support, like a ventilator, ECMO machine, heart lung machine, whatever. And my brother came in, and Mo and Mike and Kritzer. And Kritzer, I swear to God, which is so, this is such a classic. He'd been working on the jokes for my funeral. I was in there. I, thank God, got up eventually. And then you told me, you go, I was working on some material, you know, for, because people thought I was dying for sure. And it made me laugh. I'm like, that's such a great Hollywood story. Yeah. Oh, you're alive? Shit, right. I have great jokes.
Yeah, and, right. So what stimulated this, I'm going to finish the Bert and then I'm going to go right to Tom. So we're at Bert's funeral and I'm giving a speech and I gave him, I had a funny line because it's the truth. I said, look, when I was young, for some reason, I used to go to barbershops and they had Playboy magazines there. My mother would, she would like let me steal the centerfolds and I would pin up these naked ladies in my room. You know, she probably thought, okay, I'm a healthy young kid. Yeah. And one day I pulled one out and I got home. It was freaking Burt Reynolds from his naked shot. So I put it in my room anyway. I didn't care. And I said, you know, I used to look at those pictures of those naked girls. And I said, you know what? I never got one of those naked girls, but I did get Burt Reynolds. And they love that. So Tom, now can I tell the truth about my theory is? So here's the crazy thing. Tom gets admitted to a UCLA hospital with multiple organs failing. It's the worst scenario that you can imagine, okay? And he has some cash on him that was at the house that we had to get. And Tom's like, he's on all these machines keeping him alive and he can only write certain things on this thing. And he calls me over and he writes and he goes, he wanted me to take care of the money, which I did. And so I had the money. I was calling his lawyers, finding out if there was a will. We did not think he was going to make it through this. By the way, to this day, I am 1,000% positive that Tom was the first case of COVID in California because he had all, even the doctors later on when we called them after, do you think that was the first case? They said, we think it was. So that's what really was happening. He was going through the beginning horror stories when they didn't know how to deal with COVID. Yeah. So we were trying to find his will. I was going there every day with his assistant, Sasha, with his brother. And we did not think I thought I was losing my very close friend and client. And yes, I was preparing that if there was a funeral, I knew that I did a good job at Burt Reynolds and I knew how the joke went off that I was going to do my my Tom Arnold stuff.
Yeah.
One other thing about Tom that we have to talk about divorces that I did negotiate for him, and it wasn't in a bathroom this time, is that Roseanne, out of the blue, had a roast or a comedy special.
Oh, yeah.
Tom hadn't been in Roseanne's presence in how many years? And Roseanne has
18 years.
18. So they get me the contract. I run it by Tom because they said, look, we really want Tom to do this. Roseanne wants Tom to do this. And in the deal, I was negotiating the backstage that they weren't allowed to shake each other's hands, go near each other, anything. And we had all these conditions and Tom went and it was so great. At the end, we were leaving and then we got a message, you know, Roseanne would like to come over. Is that okay? And I sat there, I sat while two of them It was so not. They were so nice to each other at that moment. It was, but you knew it was a pivotal moment because over the years I wasn't representing them. That I used to watch it on like Entertainment Tonight. You know, it was truly incredible. But it was all negotiated of what they could do. But
well, also it went like this. Somebody called me on Tuesday. The roast is Saturday. Hey, I'm the producer of the roast, Joe Gallant. Oh, I just happened to, your number just popped. I go, what do you want? What's going on at the roast? Oh, Roseanne has an idea. If you dress like a waiter and come out during the roast and serve her a drink and then leave, I go, so I wouldn't be roasting her? No, it'll be hilarious. I go, that's not happening. And because he was like, can Roseanne call you? I go, no. Because if she'd called me with this, it would have been like, that's a stupid idea. Fuck you. It would never happen. Yeah. So then the next day calls back. Okay, now she'd like you to come out and roast the other people on the dais, but not her. I go, well, people would be pissed. That's not going to happen, whatever. And then Thursday, they're like, okay, whatever you want. We need it. And they obviously needed me at this. So Kritzer, Marty Singer, the lawyers, we are not allowed to be in the same room, Roseanne. If I say something about her vagina or she says something about my penis, we have to pay each other $100,000. This is the craziest.
$100,000.
We end up spending all night the night before, the lawyers in New York and whatever, just so we could be in the room together. Uh-huh. And so Kritzer, I get there and I'm like, I don't know what's going to go off. I don't know. Kritzer got me a good deal. I got a private jet and a bunch of money. But it until the last second, they hid me somewhere. Kritzer was there, and in a trailer or something. I didn't know for sure because I knowing her, it could go. But then it happened, and Kritzer will tell you this: people were fucking surprised. People are not surprised, you know, because they made some jokes about me before, and even Jane, what's her name, did not know I was going to do it until I went back. They brought me backstage, and what's her name? Jade. She's hilarious.
She was great.
And then she goes out.
The nurse one. What was the show?
Yeah.
Nurse Tech.
Yeah, she was on Glee too. I think she was a Glee. So, and she's amazing. I know her. So, anyway, I come out and I get backstage, and they come out and tell Jade that, oh, Tom Arnold is here. And she's like, what? And then she goes to the audience, hey, there's someone else that would just like to add a couple things. Tom Arnold. The audience didn't believe it. And then as I walk out, I could feel a gasp from the people on the dais, Amy Schumer, the other people. Like, and it went great. I just went for it.
It was fantastic.
And then, I'm going to have to find it.
Backstage, I didn't see what people were doing when they left with her. I don't know if they gave a fist bump. We had an awkward hug. Go backstage, and then she's back there, Crystal thing. And people want to take a picture of Roseanne and I. And she's like, I need to go into the restroom first. And then I was like, well, fuck that. She doesn't want a picture. Let's go. And I headed to the airport, he'll tell you. And then the woman I was dating at the time, I told her how to go, and I said this. I go, but she said she wanted a picture. But then she goes, well, no, she had to go look in the mirror. She's not going to take a picture with her ex.
Yes.
18 years. So it was, it was a good thing. Also, when I was on life support, Kritzer and Marty Singer found out that I still had my ex, Ashley's. She was in charge of my do not resuscitate still. We were pulled up. And Marty Singer, as you know, you want to tell it? He went over to her place at night.
Yeah. He said, 3 in the morning and said, you got to sign this right now.
Yeah. He did it right to her face. Like, this is what's happening. And I love him for that, too.
I love that.
You don't think of those things. You're getting a divorce. It's chaos. And then
you're a lucky man. You've got some good
I'm very
support,
lucky.
Some great friends.
When Tom came out of it, when we saw that Tom's organs were starting to come back and he still had the tubes in them, I showed up with the bag that had the money in, and Tom, with no energy, looked up, and he got up, he looked at me, he went.
Yeah. It had the money, but here's the thing, it also had the tape, the stuff that Zabin and we all, these digital, all the tapes from all the shit that got out.
Yep.
And right when, after the 10th of, when we were there, the 10th of January 2020, when I got the, okay, here's the deal, 50-50, whatever, I went, she was still accessing my bank account, so I went to the bank, got rid of every account. He got me the best bookkeeper, Audrey. She's a legend.
Audrey's the best. Audrey Lee.
And I was scared that I didn't have, that she still had it. So I got $125,000 cash, put it in a backpack. And I go, this is going to get me and the kids through until we get this Shapiro. And that was what?
That's what I was schlepping. I was schlepping that back and forth.
Yeah.
Good man, Kritzer.
Yeah, good man. Very good.
The last thing I just want to say that I want to kind of give a little piece of advice since we're talking about money is, as we know, Tom and I especially, we spent so much on lawyers, you know. Mm-hmm. If you are going to get divorced, the couple should really have a serious conversation of how much money they really are willing to waste. And it's a waste. And I truly recommend, if you can do a mediator, and even if the wife says to you, you know what, I am, you know, blah, 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 or the male says that, do a mediator. Have your lawyer just advise on the final deal, okay? Yes. But that waste of money, especially when there's children involved, it the only one, and these couples, they just can't get it. The only people that get rich are the lawyers, and the only people that lose the most money are your children, okay? So
you got Gary Fishbein. You got a mediator. Oh, boy. Let's come and get Gary Fishbein. He's great. He's a great mediator. She agreed to it for a bit. Like, he's getting us through this thing. And eventually he just quit. Kept saying, okay, I don't agree anymore or whatever. But that was the right thing.
He did both of mine. He oversaw the mediator on the second divorce. And he definitely got gray hairs from my first divorce from me in trying to control my emotions, which were completely out of control and loose, you know? I'm going to end it this way. Divorce is the most stressful thing you can ever go through. Mm-hmm. But there's so many ways you can save your time and energy.
There are.
If you just stay focused on trying to close the deal. You know, and it doesn't matter who's right or wrong, because it doesn't in the state of California. If you got a break for who's right or wrong, then it would be a different conversation. They don't care. They do not care. And I think people, you know, look, man, I lost my health over this thing. And I'm thankful that I'm, you know, is doing as great as I am now, you know. And so that, by the way, there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Definitely.
I went through the worst. I went through another divorce, and there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And I'd the last thing at party talk, it helps. I mean, it's still awful, but it helps when you, me, you, everybody, haven't done anything that could be catastrophic to a relationship. Cheated, did this, did that, did this. You know, even if you're like, I am the good guy here, but it helps because otherwise you're thinking, oh, I did all of this. Yeah, I don't care what she did.
Conscience.
That guilt stays with you and you make super bad decisions, but it just helps, you know, it doesn't, you can do everything right and still get divorced and that other person, but it's helpful when you get over, you're like, okay, I did some things wrong. I said some things or whatever, but I didn't break any of the big rules.
Yeah.
And that's very helpful.
Here's what I did for me. Is through the first divorce and all the ugliness, what I ended up doing is I kept all my emails. And what I did is I wrote under the emails, and it's a stack like this, it's in my safe upstairs. And I wrote what I was thinking. You know, when something really hurt, like an ugly email came into me, I wrote, well, you know what, this is what I'm thinking, or I was wrong. I have all my notes there, and maybe one day, I kind of think like I would hope my kids may want to look at that later on when I'm gone.
If they're ever going through a divorce,
I'll read them at your funeral.
That's right. But Tom, this is what I want to do, Tom. This is the idea, and I may be giving this away, but if anyone out there takes our idea, it's Tom and I, we should be doing it. What I really wanted to do is I wanted to make an art exhibit in LA and New York, and you walk in and all it is pictures of wedding pictures of beautiful couples and their family, and maybe like the Jewish ketubah thing that they signed. And then under it, what happened in their marriage and what they say about each other. I would love to go to that. That's kind of fun.
Awesome.
You know what? After my this most recent divorce, and she moves out of the house, and where the kids are there, and you take down, there's no way I was leaving any pictures of her and of me, but I was going through my old wedding pictures, and not Roseanne, but the middle two are just in style, covered them. They're Beverly Hills Hotel. They're beautiful. The brides are beautiful. I look good. And so I started putting those on. Because you get to decide, it's your house, what, you know, it was good for my kids because they like, oh, you have been married before, and that we have this and that, and we talk about all the different things, but it felt really good to keep the second marriage. Where Farley's my best man, I'm like, that's going to be my marriage.
Doesn't it eat you up when there's a good picture of you that you can't show because it's a marriage picture, but it's a good picture.
But also, there's a business that will take them out.
Or when Apple sends you one on your phone and you're like,
I had a went to the White House with Roseanne and Bill Clinton, and he's hugging, and he's you can see her hand. I tried to edit it, but there's a business that takes them out completely. You can keep the cool people that you met or whatever, and then you get to keep the pictures because
that's funny.
Just happy endings. Eric, you got to get us a deal. We want a deal, a podcast. We want to help us take this to the next level.
Yeah, we'll shop this around.
Mom wants to go out on top, Eric.
I do. Oh, that was good. I like what you did there. Oh, that was good.
Literally.
I like what you did there.
I am on top. I feel like, I have to tell you, I absolutely feel like I am on top. I can't think of anything. Obviously, you want to work more, you want this, but every day with these kids is a gift. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is where I get my self-esteem. You know, the other stuff, because it's always like, we're working on this or that, and the business has been so shitty. Eric calls, says, I've been in business 1986. This is the worst time ever. And he goes, you know what's great? Our clients are not blaming us. I go, hold on, then slow down. That's a manipulative. They're really cool with it. I'm like, okay,
that's funny.
Well, we just keep going. Well, thank you, Eric. Sure. I love you,
Tom. I love you. Weekend.
So nice to finally meet you.
Yeah, great hanging out with you guys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.